This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only. Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of the Star Trek Lower Decks podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And tonight, we will be covering season 1, episode 10 of Star Trek Lower Decks, titled, No Small Parts. But before we get started, we want to mention one more time something that we had been mentioning at the end of the podcast, but it's especially mentionable this week, because this is the last episode of the Lower Decks podcast for, you know, a while. And that podcast is available on both the Picard and the Discovery feeds. But when we go to Discovery next week, and Ruthie will be returning, we only have that one on the Discovery feed. So if you're planning to watch next week and you plan to listen to us, make sure you subscribe to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed on whatever podcast client that you're listening to us on now. Or if you listen to us on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, you don't have to do anything. And of course, if you listen to us on the Discovery feed, you don't have to do anything either. But all right, so we don't have anything for last week, so we're going to just go right into this week's episode. Season 1, Episode 10, No Small Parts, is written by the showrunner, executive producer, and creator of Star Trek Lower Decks, none other than, I'll get his name right this time, Mike McMahon. And he, of course, wrote the first episode, Season 1, Episode 1, Second Contact, which is, they mentioned Second Contact a couple times in the episode, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. Directed by supervising director Barry J. Kelly. And the description from CBS.com is as follows. Season finale. The USS Cerritos encounters a familiar enemy. Tendi helps a struggling recruit find her footing. That is TV-14 with language and violence, with the air date of October 7th, 2020. Always a day ahead of when it actually airs for most of us, mm-hmm. unless you're on the West Coast. No star date was given during the episode, and I'm unsure what time it was released, because I didn't watch it when it came on. I watched it Thursday morning, actually. So the runtime of it was 28 minutes and 40 seconds, which was a record for length for the show. So, Kyle, there was a little bit of tension here. Would the show get a third 10 in a row from you? So,
well, yes, I have to give it a 10 sweet little Captain Kisses. Yeah, I just, like we had talked about, like, oh, we hope that it will land on its feet. And I didn't get to watch it until actually like Friday, but I kind of started catching wind that, like, oh, it was going to be really good. And sure enough, I think they just nailed this out of the park. It was amazing.
I thought so too. I also gave it a 10, and I'm going to give it 10 kick-ass USS Titans.
Yes. So,
yeah, because we'll talk more about the Titan, but I thought that was particularly badass. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move into our listener ratings.
All right. And our first one comes from Edwin from Arizona, and he gives it a 10 peanut hamper.
James, the augmented sailor. We finally got to hear from him, and boy, do we hear from him in this episode. More on that later. His rating is 10 selfish exocomps. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Aaron from Akron, he gives this a 10 out of 10 dead security officers. Rest in peace, Tasha.
Yes. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, you're right. And in fact, that gets mentioned, and I'll mention it in the references section. LT from NC, looks like he didn't like it as much as the rest of us. He gave it 8.5 out of 10. Captain Freeman Day will be super awkward this year. And I included his feedback in here because it was fairly short. He said, I was afraid about them sticking the landing after three amazing episodes, and it turns out I was right. While I really liked it as a whole, it just didn't quite hit the same notes as the previous ones. Wes from Minnesota, on the other hand, begs to differ. He says, best season finale of any Star Trek ever. Well, except for Best of Both Worlds. Yeah. The episode that I think I've watched 68 or 69 times at this point. A lot. More than 47, put it that way. He gives it 10 times Riker smuggled contraband to Mariner out of 10. All right. So now it's time for our yeses.
Yes.
Edwin from Arizona says yes to everything. Great finale.
And Aaron from Akron gives it, finally seeing the USS Titan on screen.
Yes. For the first time in canon and exactly as depicted in beta canon. So that was very cool because I think we first saw that on the picture of, on the cover of a novel. And I think it's been in Star Trek Online, if I'm not mistaken, but they followed the exact design. It looked exactly as I've seen before. I'm sure the Trek Yards guys were happy. I haven't listened to them or watched their coverage yet, but I'm sure they were ecstatic. Wes from Minnesota says, Riker saving the Cerritos in the nick of time, and it was better than his jumping at the last moment in the Picard season one finale. Yes, it was. Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, and LT from NC, he gives us his yeses are, I love the TAS picture on Ransom's pad when they were talking about Beta 3. His TOS reference and the rift on episodic shows was really funny. Yep. I have to definitely agree. I was going to put some of those in my comments, but then, you know, thank you, LT. I was like, good, yeah. Someone's going to mention it because it was...
Yeah. The episodic thing, like, you know, every week, that was,
yeah,
that was
like, perfect. Oh, they're meeting aliens every week. And yep. I was like,
yep. Perfect.
It's hilarious. And he goes on, I love the fact that we got to see the evolved Paklids.
It's like, yeah, every ship is the Enterprise. I got to get that. Another Enterprise.
I know. That's hilarious. And then he says, Shax, I was kind of upset over him getting killed, but he was a hero in the end, saving his baby bear and in turn saving the Cerritos.
Yep.
I thought it was very, you know, it's one thing to be like, we get our deaths and, you know, not to cross shows or whatever, you know, it's like we're talking about Walking Dead and stuff like that. But it's like to actually see a death of a major character doesn't happen very often. In Star Trek, mm-hmm. You know, we have like Tasha and stuff like that, but it's like just being like them doing this and like, and the way he went out was very like, oh, wow. Like heroic. That's kind of a, yeah, heroic. And also like, that's a big deal. You know, it's like they could easily just been like, oh, no. And he shows up and he like got beamed out at the very last minute. But it was like, yeah, he kind of did it in a very, like, it was so like Bajoran, like, and you know, it's like, I was kind of a little bit shocked that I'm like, oh wow, they actually went there. So,
yeah. And he was like beating up, another guy.
Yeah.
as the ship's about to explode, you know? So, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. Seeing the Titan rush into the rescue got me a little misty. I agree. I had a little tear to my eye. So
it was the combination of seeing the Titan, hearing Will Riker's voice, and then the theme song to TNG.
Yes.
I mean, I got a little misty eye because it was like, oh my gosh, like everything put together. And it was like,
I kind of was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Yep. Yeah.
Everything played right into it. So it was perfect.
Yep. All right. Kyle, what do you have for yeses?
Again, trying not to just be like rehashing some of what our great listeners have, like, you know, commented on, but really the whole episode just was, I'm just going to just throw it all, just like everything about it. I mean, obviously, yeah, you could be nitpicking this and that, but as just watching the show and like, you know, coming off the fact that it's like, I wasn't able to see it, you know, right when it aired. So I wasn't like, oh, I'm the first to see it. You know, it's like I had to wait kind of like later until like on Friday or today. And like saw the comments and like I already kind of an idea like, oh, everybody's really enjoying this. And then it's just like my first viewing. And I was just like blown away. Like it was just so much fun. Like
I was kind of disappointed when I found out you hadn't had a chance to watch it yet. I wanted to talk to you about it. So
yeah, and it's just like, it was like, I wanted to, but I'm like, yeah, once I did see it, but like I have to say that I should listen to myself at the beginning of the season.
You should. Yeah, you should.
See how I was and like, oh, I'm just kind of almost dismissing this. I'm not really sure about this, blah, 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 to just like where I am now. And I'm like, wow. I'm like,
yeah, I would agree. This show has been a really pleasant surprise. And, you know, it started out being like reverent to Trek, but I think it's gone past its reverence to actually be really, really outstanding. And, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I liked it just because it was in the era, you know, at first.
Mm-hmm.
And, it has gotten better and better and better. And, you know, it got my second 10 in a row. And I don't think this episode was perfect. The things there are, I do have a couple of no's, but they weren't worth docking. So,
yeah.
I mean, if I really wanted to dock it, I might give it a 9.8 or something like that. But I didn't have the heart to dock it because I just felt like the positives of it were greater than a 10. So even with any negatives, it was a 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. No, I would just have to say though, that it's like, this was not something that I think most Trekkies are kind of like, you know, like there's several sides of everything in the Trek world and fans and all this other stuff, but it was someone that I feel like they did a job of basically making this very, like, I don't know if it's like relatable or, but like bringing another style to Trek that someone, I would say as myself, was like, oh, no, you have to do it in this certain way and this and that.
Yeah.
And then here I am completely now a convert and just being like, I enjoyed this so much. And it's like, if that was kind of their angle or like, or at least just like, just they wanted to have fun. It's like, well, you got me because this was not exactly what I thought I was going to be at the end of this. I thought I was like, oh, I'll probably, you know, it's like, I'm just doing this. And like, but I don't think I'll ever go back to like, you know, watch it again. Like I do the regular
season. I remember you saying that more than once.
And now I'm like, you know, I'm probably going to have this actually on my list and like, hey, I'll just rewatch this, you know, through my rotation of all Trek. I really do have to say that. It's like, I'm very much appreciative of like the work they did and like the story and the character building. And like, so yeah, I'm like, just yes, overall, very happy. I'll leave it there. And my next yes, I guess, I don't know, is just like the TT30311. It gave me some Tilly vibes. So I enjoyed it. I thought the robot and just like whatever, it was fun. And Tindy was like, oh, I have like a new project, new friend, somebody to like, do off of. But yeah, my first thought was all like, oh, this feels like Tilly, and it didn't really.
Tindy felt like Tilly? So
No. The robot.
The robot felt like Tilly.
Yeah, Peanut Hamper. It was just like, the way it came across and just like, oh, I'm like, I'm trying my hardest to like do this thing. And like, oh, dang. It's like when it was like messing with the canisters and Tendy was just like, oh, it's just trying to like put those canisters away. So I just kind of got that vibe, but it was kind of fun. And then the end of it, I felt bad that it was hilarious that Peanut Hamper was like asked to basically save the day. It was like, oh no, like I just wanted to make my father mad to join Starfleet.
Yeah.
But it ends up at the end, basically like lost in space. So it was very interesting, but I liked it. Shax, when he was taking Rutherford to the ship and saying, this is the best day of my life, I was so happy for him because he's been wanting to eject Warp Cores. He's been wanting to like fire first, ask questions later. It's like he was asking the captain just like, oh no, I've been really good this month, please let me eject the warp core. And he really got to go out as a hero and just be very, very Bajoran like, as we know the Bajorans are, just like, I'm going to fight everything to the end and enjoying. I didn't like him dying,
right,
per se, but it was just like, it was just fun to see him being like, oh yes, I get to, go out there and just like start kicking some butt. And
yeah,
that was it.
Yeah. All right. For my yeses, thing I would really say is that we really see things change up for the second season. So, that's kind of obvious, but just to highlight it, first of all, Boimler's now been promoted and he's serving on the Titan. So whether or not he's actually in the second season, I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Maybe we're going to see a lot on the Titan. So maybe we'll see more of Riker and Troy. Who knows? That would be cool. Rutherford has lost his memory. So it seems like he knows how to do stuff, but his memory of people is missing, at least the people that he knew while he had the implant, I guess. So it sounds like Mariner, I don't know, is she getting promoted too? Like, is she possibly replacing Shax, or will she just be working closer with her mom, Captain Freeman? It's, it made me think that maybe Mariner would be good for Section 31. Maybe Mariner is going to be a part of the Section 31 show.
What?
Okay. We don't know much about it, but that would be kind of cool. Would be really weird to have an animated character appear as a live character on a live action show, But a lot of people have thought that we should see, like in the second season of Picard, like a commander or a Captain Mariner. That would be cool. But I could see a Section 31 Agent Mariner if Section 31, still exists after the Dominion War. Who knows? And of course, big thing is Lieutenant Shax is dead. So to that, we have to say,
aww. Yes.
Yeah. I especially liked Rutherford and his new modes, which I guess are no longer working. Well, his whole implant is off for that matter. So yeah. I don't know if he's going to still have a replacement implant. We don't actually know like why he had the implant in the first place, but I would like to know why. But anyway, So we heard his many modes that he got. He had that new button, I guess, that showed up. So we hear that first mode, which wasn't really given a name, but it was kind of like he said something like Captain Freeman Day would be especially awkward this year. I think that was mentioned earlier. Then we get extremely optimistic mode, sexy mode, and then I had to do a repetitive, like, rewind play to get this. But we see passive aggressive mode, Klingon mode, holiday spirit mode, and then we hear British mode, which, you know, he said like cheerio or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's not named, but we hear him go into cowboy mode. So, the exocomp has already been mentioned, but I noticed that it had a uniform and is an ensign. So it's in Starfleet. It's not just a device. It is a sentient being, and given a uniform, probably a paint job in its case, but you know, and everyone sucking up to Mariner except the number one suck up on the ship, Boimler. He wasn't sucking up to her, but I especially like that Lieutenant Levy guy saying things like Wolf 359 was an inside job.
That just cracked me up so much. Well,
the funny thing is, it was an inside job. Locutus.
Yeah, I guess he put it that way.
I mean, literally, it was an inside job. That was the whole point. And then, of course, changelings aren't real. The Dominion War didn't happen. It didn't
happen. I know.
Oh, that was so funny. But I wonder if he thinks the galaxy is flat.
Probably.
Yeah. Ransom and Mariner, this has been hinted at, but judging by Ransom's actions there, he seems to have a latent attraction to Mariner, and I think it's the same, it based on things that she said, it's mutual. So I don't know if that's going to mean a relationship evolving. I don't see that happening while she's an ensign. So if she gets promoted to lieutenant, I could see it happening. And I guess other people have mentioned the Titan, but I just wanted to especially say that when the Titan came in, we heard the TNG theme. I was like, oh my God.
It was epic.
It was epic. I had to watch that like multiple times. So I didn't get to see the episode as many times as I would have liked, but I did see certain parts of it multiple times, and that was one of the parts that I saw multiple times.
Yeah. I went back and like watched that kind of over and over again.
Yes.
So it's like I like got to watch the episode in full a certain amount of times, but I just kept rewinding it there, and I was like, yes, this is awesome.
In fact, listeners, my backdrop is the Titan coming in battle, and we see in the background like a mega explosion that's kind of flying away from it. So I might use that as the cover for the blog post this week. So, all right. So that is it for our yeses. So now it is time for our noes.
No!
Aaron from Akron says, rest in peace, Lieutenant Shax. We hardly knew ya, or hardly knew ye. And then Wes from Minnesota, his no was, can't find any faults with this one.
All right. What about your nose?
I kind of almost agreed with Wes where I was like, oh, I don't really have a no, because I was kind of like going through my notes and not finding one. But I guess if I'm going to have to do something just because it's Ransom, I was just like his whole like, that whole like hard rift where he's like, oh, I'm hard. Oh, if you want me to get hard, oh, hard. It's like, it was just it was just so like, okay, get it. Ha ha. Just really like, oh, here's you know, a sexual innuendo. Like, just, I don't know. It was just, if I was going to have any no, just be like, that's nitpicking, but it was just because it was kind of stupid, but it was, you know, whatever. To me, it fit Ransom's character. So it was kind of like, okay, yeah, you're kind of a, you know, kind jerk. Of a bro. Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. So it's like, okay. So that was it.
Mm-hmm. I've got to go back in and watch this because I don't trust this, but when I saw it, this is what I heard and saw. Riker comes in shooting and then calls for red alert. That's kind of weird. He'd be shooting at yellow alert. So I don't know. Maybe he called red alert multiple times, but I question that if that is was the case. So I will go back in, and if I find that this doesn't track, I will say, but if it is correct, I will put this in. So I recorded both the, or while we're recording, I put in the incorrect and the correct sound effects. So we'll see which one I leave. Secondly, why didn't Rutherford need to sleep when he changed his software? Like, I thought from, you know, a couple of episodes ago, you know, he had that whole thing where he was missing time and we saw him upgrade during the episode, but he never like went to sleep. So I don't know if he changed that since the last episode or two episodes ago, I guess, or if that was just a miss. So
are you talking about the whole mode, like button mode thing?
No, there was something else. Before he went over to the Packlid ship.
Oh, he put the virus soft whatever yes. into his head. Yeah.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Like, why could he yeah, do why? That and put the virus into his head, but not shut down? So
yeah.
that's,
yeah.
I that's mean, maybe it's point. Not the same kind of thing, but still.
He was installing an app, not doing a software update.
There you go. There you go.
So maybe yeah, maybe that's it.
He didn't update his iOS or Android. Yeah. Okay. That could
that's
explain.
The, yeah. That's the only thing. I could
okay.
Say.
Okay. If we think about it like that, if it's an app versus the OS, then I guess it makes sense. So, but I won't change the sound effect based on that. Okay, so anyway, that's it for our no's. So now is time for our not good enough section.
Not good enough, damn it, not good enough.
And our first not good enough comes from Wes from Minnesota, and he says, I wonder if it is the same Packlids who encountered the Enterprise D back in Samaritan Snare. More Riker, please. The way it was acted by Jonathan Frakes was hilarious.
Yep. If it wasn't the same Packlids, they certainly you know, shared that knowledge with the Packlids that were on what we saw at Samaritan Snare. I know that the captain looked very familiar to the one that was seen in Samaritan Snare, but I don't know. And the actor that played that character didn't voice it because he died many years ago. So Christopher, I can't remember his name, but anyway, LT from NC. Has a few. He says, I thought the open line on the comm badge for the Mariner reveal was just a little too convenient, but it did set the stage for the rest of the ongoing drama of the reveal. Yeah, I agree with that. It was a little convenient.
It was kind of on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it worked for what it needed to do, and I thought it was funny in this setting that she like they're like you know her mom's basically I was like they're like okay we're getting ready to leave Beta 3 and it's like oh no not on a cruise up and of course it's Mariner and then she's down there giving crayons and all this stuff you know because those people I guess from the computer Landru you know the whole setting of it all so it's just like I don't know I kind of didn't really feel like that was like too like it like somehow was like out of place or anything like that. I thought it was just like, oh, okay, this is funny. Cause like, okay, here they are. I feel like they're like in a private conversation and here's Boimler kind of confronting Mariner. But of course there's a comm badge open. Of course the captain and the bridge crew like listening to that, you know? So I don't know. I thought it was okay.
I see where you're coming from when you say that. I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it, but it could have been done a little better, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it could.
Yeah. Captain Dayton and her crew just couldn't catch a break. Yeah, and, you know, she didn't even remove the plastic.
Which, she just got a brand new ship that still had all the plastic film on it. Didn't even get to...
Are they still using plastic in the 2380s?
You got to protect those screens. You got to protect the touchpads. If that's a thing for like a time capsule or like some, I wish we could go in the future to see if that's still a thing.
I could see like a transparent aluminum thing. I don't know. His last is Peanut Hamper. And of course, Tendi thinks it's great. Which reminds me of her knowledge of dogs and, you know, that episode. But it certainly wasn't a great name and meant nothing. Anyway. All right. You have a not good enough?
Yeah. And I think I'm kind of re-questioning this just to the fact that, like, what we just talked about, like, how the show had progressed and how it turned someone who was like a viewer of like me that was just like, oh, I'm not, this is horrible, to being like where I am today. But I mean, I guess if I had to put it not good enough, and I feel like I can do this finale because it's kind of the encompassing of the whole entire season as a whole, as well as the finale. It was just like, I kind of wish that this kind of started happening earlier. But the more I think about it, though, too, it's like, well, you know, we didn't even know who these characters were. We needed to kind of get the whole, like, development and, like, to be able to get to that point where we, you know, we talk about, like, you know, not caring about certain characters because they're never on screen or we never even got the able to actually, you know, have any feelings for them or even understand their backstory. And the progression of this whole season, it started off as like, oh, yeah, this is kind of novel, fun, whatever. But I feel like towards the end of this now, it's like I really have like a good idea of like where Boimler and Rutherford and, you know, Mariner and Tendi, you know, like as characters are. And like I've gotten to almost like, you know, I've gotten to know them and I've really like now have my emotional connection to them and all this other stuff. That to me is just like where these last few episodes... Yeah, I think story-wise, there should be good plots and good all this other stuff. But this just ended up basically tying everything together and then made it all just wonderful and great. I just don't know if, like, you know, if they could have done more, you know, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of like a little weird thing where I just kind of put this in here as being like, well, I kind of wish the whole season was like this, but I don't know if that's necessarily like, oh, it could never have been that because you can't just have the pilot being like, oh, here's these characters. You have no idea who they are, like any of their background. And it was just like, oh, well, they're going to make some amazing show. Like if they showed the finale at the season premiere, obviously would not have worked.
No.
And like, right. So I think that's where I'm coming from, where it's like, I kind of was like, my initial not good enough was like, oh, no, I wish they could have like cranked this up sooner. But now I'm kind of like going back being like, you know, yeah, it probably could have maybe hit maybe mid-season that some of this stuff was happening, like where we were basically giving it eights and nines and now we're giving it tens. So I don't know. That's all I'm trying to say.
I mean, it's difficult to know. It's possible that the first few episodes could have been better if they hadn't been COVID-ed.
Man, that's true.
Like everything got rushed in according to what Mike McMahon has said, you know, that everything was like pushed up 2 months. So maybe we don't know. Like maybe there were some things that they had to take out of the first episode or, you know, because they weren't animated. in time or whatever. I mean, we don't know, but it's possible that it could have been, you know, and maybe you could say this for the first, you know, two or three episodes, but I mean, also it is common for a show to get its groove as time goes on. So I think that's true. I think also that we've seen other shows that have like hit the ground running. The Walking Dead, its pilot, for example, I think was a home run, grand slam, like one of the best pilots I've ever seen. But it also was based upon a novel, or not a novel, sorry, a graphic novel. graphic novel, sorry. But based on existing material, so this is all, you know, new story, so, and a new medium and all that stuff, new characters. So I can see things not quite working at the start. But
Well then that's my question. That's my question though, is then the whole, like, and you know, if then, cause I feel like we're in this kind of new like way of how media and television is, you know, like streaming, all that stuff gets done. Like when you're talking about, it's like, oh, a series, like, it's like, you know, yeah, it does take a while. Sometimes, you know, they just have to find their groove. And then when they find it, it's like perfect, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. But you know, we start, like, you go back to like DS9 and even, you know, TNG, it's like, but they're writing it as they're going to film it the next week. And so it's like, they're continuously doing this. I always feel like that this is being done like almost all in one batch, and then they just get it all done and then, you know, put it out there. So if it is still in the same process, then okay, that I understand. But I don't know, and then, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like, I feel like it's like they've had time to develop this, and then they were just like, and it's, especially it's animation, they're not pushing a clock where it's like every week we've got to get this done and then get it, you know, filmed and all this other stuff, and then we'll put it out there.
Yeah,
like this is like, oh, we already have the story arc, we already know what we're gonna do, and it's like, okay, now we just gotta basically put it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know if there's a way to know other than, you know, if we ever get to interview Mike McMahon, we might
get him on.
We'd ask him. But I think we can both agree that the show just got better and better and better as the season went along. And I can't wait for season two. This show has so totally surprised me. I would not, despite giving it a 10, the last two episodes, and a 9.5 for the third to last episode, you giving it, you know, 3 10s in a row, still not my favorite show. Discovery, for those of you that don't like Discovery, tough. Discovery is my favorite show, and I'm doing a rewatch right now preparing for season three. And, you know, it just, that show just blows me away. And I think it was better than Picard. I think that I'm really looking forward to season three. And from the TNG era, TNG is going to be my favorite. I have a special relationship with it. I also have a special relationship with DS9 because I sold the story to it. But I love that just as much. It's kind of like, you know, trying to choose your favorite child, I guess. and I love Voyager, but if I'm choosing my favorite child, it's kind of like the black sheep. Actually, I guess Enterprise would be the black sheep of the four, but
yeah.
But I never quite connected with Voyager as much as I did DS9 and TNG. Almost as much, but not quite as much. And I think a lot of it has to do with how it kind of started with that whole Maquis versus Starfleet, and they kind of just dropped it. And I think I was really disappointed by that. And my interest in the show just went down like maybe 10% when that happened. And it just basically, it lowered it just based on that. So my love for Voyager, although it's pretty strong, is just a little bit less than DS9 and TNG, but it's still up there. I mean, it's probably my fifth favorite show of all time. So it's still one of my favorites. It's just not quite as high. Anyway.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Okay, Blaine. I know I've been wanting to play that for a while, but anyway. Okay, so I don't really have a not good enough other than what I've already said, just commenting on what you said. So with that, we've got three voicemails this week, so let's open Hailing Frequencies and get to our listener feedback section. So our first bit of feedback is from our perfect 10 out of 10 for episode 10, Jeff, X-Force 11.
Hello, Star Trek fans. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback about No Small Parts. Wow, what a way to finish up the season. I loved all the action. I love that we got Riker and Troy. And oh my goodness, where is this going to put us in next season with Lieutenant J.G. Boimler being on the Titan? Are we going to not see him next season, or will he be back? Oh my goodness. Just a great way to finish the season. I really think it's progressed a long way, and I'm looking forward to seeing next season. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11, for your 10 out of 10 perfect Showcase Award winning feedback. So, yes, it was great to see Riker and Troy, and I'm not surprised. I mean, as soon as the Titan was mentioned, I think they mentioned we and the Titan are in range, and Freeman says, you know, she wanted to go in, and yeah, poor Captain Dayton, who obviously she's had to bail out. She must have been like the flunkiest of flunky captains. Because it seemed like a lot of captains were bailing her out. But unfortunately, she probably didn't deserve what happened on the Solvang, because nobody bailed her out this time. She and her crew are just gone. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree, though. It's like all the action in this episode, too, was like a lot of fun. Because it's like watching, you know, any of our Trek movies. It's like, oh, it got to that point, and it's just like all this, like, just, I don't know, you know, the battle, yeah, the big battles, you know, yeah, it's like we've seen that in Discovery, you know, it's like, yeah, all these big epic battles and like all this cool kind of like, you know, like I thought the Paklids, when they showed up, it was like their ship reminded me of like the ship in Nemesis. It was just like,
oh, this, yeah,
big, huge, kind of like crazy bat looking thing. But then it had all, yeah, these weapons going everywhere. But I mean, that set kind of like that tone. And I was like, oh, wow. It's like, okay, this is not just like some, you know, just whatever. It was like, this is actually serious. And then,
yeah,
you know, the destruction of the ship and like, you know, like the aggressiveness and war. Yeah, I don't know, for a cartoon, this was pretty,
yeah,
visually
it was pretty surprising. We didn't really talk about this yet, but the Paklids becoming like a big power and absorbing technology from 30 alien species, almost like, jeez, the Borg would, in a way.
Yeah,
is they're like a dumb Borg.
I know. That's
but and they mentioned more than once how they were doing it slowly. Of course, they, if you remember from Samaritan Snare, they moved around very slowly and talked very slowly. So I guess them like beaming in or doing whatever they were doing very slowly is just a Paklid thing. But yeah, I mean, for the Paklids to suddenly become a big threat and not, you know, some nuisance was pretty interesting. And I got to commend Mike McMahon for coming up with that, because I would never have thought of making the Paklids be threatening like this. So, mm-hmm, like I say, it was kind of, you know, like a dumb Borg in a way, absorbing 30 alien species technology. Yeah,
And instead of being like assimilate, it's like, oh, ship pieces. We want our ship pieces.
Yeah.
More ship pieces to get all the ship pieces.
Exactly. And, you know, they had, you know, some kind of tethering technology. You know, it wasn't a tractor beam, but it was like actually like grappling like hooks or something. But like strong enough to stop a ship from going to warp and literally making it tear apart. Like, that's pretty impressive too.
Yeah.
Definitely impressive on that for the Packlids to do all that stuff. But I really did like the use of them. It was, never would have thought of using them this way. So, and the other thing you mentioned, Jeff, was Boimler. I am very curious to know if we're going to see how that's all going to fit in. Like, are we going to see Boimler? Is he going to come back to the Cerritos? Does he get demoted? Does he, do we continue to see him on the Titan? Do they move over to the Titan, you know,
Well, aren't they going to do like some kind of time jump or something next season? Be like, oh, it's been like 3 years. And like all of a sudden it's like, you know, something weird like that. So I don't know.
Or suddenly they're not on the lower decks anymore, you know? And I don't know. It's interesting to think about. But as I said in my yeses, I'm thinking Walking Dead. We have, just so you guys understand, we have a section we call our yeses on the Walking Dead talk through Awesome Sauce. I don't even remember how we started with that, but we called it Awesome Sauce. And and since we just did one, an episode 2 days ago, I'm thinking awesome. But anyway, the idea that we've got so much change just in a first season and in the first season finale, it is pretty impressive. And, you know, of course we got Lieutenant Shax dying, but also multiple characters changing. So I don't know where that's going to lead. Like, it seems like instead of an adversarial relationship, the mom and the daughter are going to start working together. And I kind of liked in this episode how she actually used Mariner's talents to her advantage by coming up with off the wall kind of idea. And, you know, a virus, again, kind of apropos to something we'd see from the today. But if you recall, Picard was going to use a virus on the Borg. He didn't end up using it, but he was going to like put in that impossible geometric shape or something that was going to cause him to overload. And they were going to implant that on Hugh, and they didn't end up doing it. So a virus, just a different type of virus, but certainly interesting to come up with that. And like I said, that's why I was thinking Section 31, because it makes sense for that. Yeah. So anyway, Jeff, thank you so much. And we'll move on to our next voicemail. And it's from Edwin from Arizona.
Hello, Brian and Kyle. I just want to chime back in last episode of Lower Deck. And yeah, I loved it. Man, this is great. I mean, the whole season, you know, it had its ups and downs, but this one definitely paid off. I wasn't expecting that, you know, Riker. You know, to see, you know, TNG in cartoon form, that was pretty cool. And I bet there's just going to be like a small cameo, but they stayed for the last part of, you know, the episode. Yeah, that did it for me. I was jagged. It was cool. I wasn't expecting that. They came in, came today. Yeah, I mean, it's really good. But I wonder, are they going to have another season or is it over now? Because, you know, one of them is on the Titan and, you know, with Shax, he's dead. But yeah, no, this was great. This was really awesome. And you guys are awesome. Man, thanks for doing this. Thanks for taking my questions and, you know, my voicemail, my second voicemail. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Edwin, for your voicemail. And I know you've given us at least one other voicemail, maybe two this week, this season. So thank you so much. You've been a regular contributor. So again, thank you for the voicemail on this season finale. You know, Riker, He looked a little different than I expected, but I really liked that we saw Riker and Troi in animated form. But I don't know, he reminded me of Ransom actually a little bit.
Yeah, same kind of body style and like, yeah, that's animation.
And he was a little goofier than I expected, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Like the whole warp factor 5, 6, 7, 8. But I didn't mind that. I mean, he's a jazz guy, so. And as far as the show moving on, it was originally given a 2-season commitment by CBS All Access. So yes, in fact, there is going to be a season 2, and we'll talk about season 2 later on in our news. So, but yes, there is a season 2. Normally, we would move on to our next voicemail, which would be from Fred from the Netherlands, but unfortunately, we don't have one this week.
Oh, I miss you, Fred.
Yeah, so we missed you, Fred. Editor's note, we actually got in a voicemail from Fred that came in after the submission deadline of like 7 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. We got this in on Saturday morning. However, because this is the last episode of Lower Decks for some time, and quite honestly, mostly because Ruthie doesn't watch this show, I have made an executive decision and I'm deciding to add this into this episode because I think it's probably more appropriate, but I don't want to make this a habit, but we're going to put it in. The only commentary that you're going to get, though, is from me. So Kyle's not here to lay in his thoughts on what Fred wrote in. So here it is in its entirety.
Hello, Brian and Kyle. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 1, Episode 10, the season finale. Sorry about last week's very short feedback, but actually I didn't have much time to make my audio feedback and I didn't have so much to say about the episode. On the other hand, this whole movie thing last week made it more and more clear what the problem, the psychological problem, is in Mariner towards her mother. And it was nicely portrayed in that movie. This episode had a lot of nice references. Actually, I didn't recognize Jonathan Frakes' voice. Marina Sirtis was very clear that it was really her voice, but I didn't recognize Jonathan's voice so much. So I had to see that on the credits. And I think apart from Q, this is actually the only real Star Trek actors that gave their voices to Lower Deck. And I mean that in the sense of their own characters. Or am I missing somebody? In this episode, a lot of references back to all kinds of series, of course, which is nice for the real Star Trek freaks, fans. And I like the idea that Ensign Mariner is Captain Freeman's illegal partner to do all the things she cannot do according to protocol and to Star Trek regulations. Funniest moment was when Boimler and Mariner were talking and he was doing a kissy face about Mariner towards her mother, and then they beamed right up into the bridge. So that was funny. My opinion about the whole series so far is that it is not so funny as some people say, but I'm probably just not a cartoon man. I never watched the animated series either. If I remember cartoons that were more or less Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, That were the things I found funny, Roadrunner. And I have a good remembrance for Tom and Jerry. And that's actually because when my father got his Alzheimer, the only thing he still could appreciate and understand and watch with his grandsons was Tom and Jerry. And the nice thing about that is you could watch it again and again, and it was every time more or less new for him. And for the kids, it's always nice to see everything 10 times. So that was all for now. Greetings, looking forward to Star Trek Discovery. Signing off, Fred from the Netherlands. Bye.
Thank you so much, Fred, for your voicemail. And like I said, earlier, you didn't make the deadline. I decided to put this in, and normally, like I said, it's not something I would do, but considering it's the last episode, and I just know Ruthie would just sit there. So I figured, yeah, it's probably the same result because Kyle's not with me talking about this one, but it makes more sense in a way, just for this time. So Fred, don't get used to this, okay? Try to get your feedback in on time. Riker, as I stated earlier, it was more the drawing of the Riker character that didn't work for me, not the voice. Although I would say the first couple of lines that Jonathan Frakes did as Riker didn't work for me as much. So he got settled into it, though, afterwards. We had Gigi Hertzler and Kenneth Mitchell perform as guest voices in earlier episodes, but you're correct, they were playing the roles that made them famous in Star Trek. So, like, especially Gigi Hertzler, who played Martok on DS9, and Kenneth Mitchell playing Klingons as well. So they were playing different things. They weren't playing the roles that they became famous for, whereas Riker, Troy, and Q are. Yeah, of course, it references the other series. That's kind of the thing it does. I don't think it's playing for funny. I think it will get jokes out when it can, but it also, I think, shows great reverence for the Star Trek that comes before it, and it honors it. So anyway, that's all I wanted to add. And now back to this week's fourth and final voicemail. Okay, so our next bit of feedback is a supersized feedback, and this is, we haven't heard from him all season long, but he has been a big contributor to both Star Trek Discovery podcast and Star Trek Picard cast, James the Augmented Sailor.
Hey, Brian and Kyle, this is James the Augmented Sailor for the Lower Decks podcast. Hey guys, sorry I've been absent for the first season there. I've had a lot of personal stuff going on this season. I've been not been able to catch the show as it's dropped, or really just been able to sit long enough to get feedback together in time for the cast. But I figured I would leave a voicemail for the season finale. I've really enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed listening to you guys talk about it. So here goes. Small Parts gets 10 selfish exocomps. Man, those guys, they really only think of themselves, huh? Those exocomps, man, way to go, guys. You gain sentience and only think of the exocomps. My yeses are going to have to be, of course, the Riker, Troy, and Titan appearances, and all the contraband that Mariner had stashed around the ship. That is completely reminiscent for me to being enlisted in the Navy myself, and we all used to stash all sorts of stuff throughout the ship that we weren't supposed to have. From overseas and things like that, and bringing it back to the States and not declaring it on customs and things like that. So that's definitely something that quite does happen. Also, totally dug the pack lads being the big baddie in the episode. Definitely dig their parallels to the humans of today. It's quite uncanny on how we want the best tech. We want it now, but we have absolutely no idea how to use it unselfishly. My nose are Shax dying, of course. He's such a fun character. I'm sorry to see him go. But do I smell a Search for Shax episode in season 2? You know, we had a Search for Spock. So why not a Search for Shax? Just let's hope it's not an odd-numbered Lower Decks episode, maybe. I don't know. Doesn't go by the odd-numbered rules as things progress. So that we don't have a, like a Search for Shax is an odd-numbered type thing. onto the not good enough, the Volsang was almost instantly destroyed with all hands lost by the pack-led ship. But the Cerritos seemed to hold up much longer. Seems a little inconsistent there, especially with the Volsang being brand new. Was it like on its shakedown cruise or something, and it had like a fatal flaw in it somewhere that went unnoticed, and then the pack legs just found it? I don't know. Who knows? But it seemed a little inconsistent, and to me, it's kind of not good enough. So it's my thoughts on that. Overall, great episode. Loved it. So that's why it gets the 10. Just overall, great season. And again, like I said, sorry I couldn't partake much in the feedback on the casts. And one other thing I wanted to touch base with you guys on was the thoughts on Mariner. I know you guys wanted to have an explanation on why she acts the way she does. I think she kind of gave that explanation kind of subtly throughout the season. She doesn't like the bureaucracy of Starfleet and the Federation. She doesn't want the scrutiny of being a top officer. She doesn't want to be tied down. She wants to do what she wants to do on her terms. Being a lower decks individual in a JO, she gets to do that a little bit easier. So with that, you know, without advancing in rank, you know, it helps her to continue to do that. So I think that's why she continues to kind of screw up, so that she doesn't advance, so that she can continue to have her way with things. But I do get your point, Brian. It kind of makes for, especially the way that she goes about doing things, being blatantly disrespectful. That's not going to take her very far. That will eventually get her kicked out. But you know, it's not as funny if she's not as blatantly disrespectful. So I think with this show, you know, it's one of those things where her attitude like that, it can't last that long. That premise has to change somehow. So I don't. It'll be interesting to see how the character evolves. I don't know if they kind of really thought that through when they were putting things together like that, but. You know, you got to think of the showrunner with Mike McMahon and think of what her character is really based on, with her being kind of the Rick from Rick and Morty archetype. So that's kind of what we're looking at there. So I don't know. It is kind of interesting to see, you know, where that is going to lead, because eventually it is going to get old, and then people are going to lose interest in it. But right now it is a lot of fun. Anyway, great show, guys. And again, sorry I didn't get any feedback in sooner. I'm glad I was able to get in for the finale, though. Have fun. You guys take the show back now. Right, bye.
Thank you so much, James, for that supersized voicemail. And I let him have a little longer than our usual 4-minute maximum because, he hasn't had a chance to send in feedback. And you know, it's funny how he said he's had personal stuff going on. He's got a new baby.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So that's what's been going on with him. So I'm sure a new child in the family is, you know, making for some sleepless nights and, you know, all the things that it can do. So but we've missed you, and thank you so much for your supersized feedback and your voicemails. It was actually 3 voicemails there I had to splice together. Because so just so you guys know, when you call in using the voicemail line, the 216 number that we give you, that has a 3-minute maximum. So just so you know. Yeah. The search for Shax.
I know, search for Shax.
I thought that was funny. I mean, I don't know, it maybe, but I definitely don't think, though, that the TV shows go by the even odd thing. And we have to remember that Star Trek Nemesis was an even movie. So it should have been a great movie, but I think the number of people that actually consider that one to be one of their favorites is a pretty small population of Trek fans. It gets better over time, though, you know, but it's still not as good as it should have been. Mm-hmm. And the original, you know, the original JJ verse, that was an odd movie. And I thought that that was probably the best of the three. So, you know, what can you say? The Volsang, USS Volsang, that he was bringing up, he thought that it was kind of inconsistent that the Volsang just blew up and disintegrated, whereas the Cerritos didn't. And the difference was that the Volsang tried to go to warp, and it was tethered, and it broke apart from the stress. So that's why it did what it did. And Captain Freeman realized that was what...
She said power down the engines. Yeah. And like, she's like, we're not doing that.
Yeah, because she... I'm not sure why she was able to figure out that that's what the Volsang did, but she did figure that out. And, you know, she was right that that is exactly what happened. And that's why it did not survive the confrontation. I think you're right about Mariner subtly explaining why she acts the way she does throughout the season. So we never got that big reveal, but I kind of understand it now that, you know, it was a lot of, you know, the pressure that she got from Freeman, you know, the pressure to live up to her father and mother, you know, and, you know, not wanting to have those things upon her, you know, wanting to do what she wants, like you said, not, you know, being tied down to the Prime Directive and Starfleet regulation. And that's why I think that she'd be great in Section 31. So maybe she's going to get recruited in season two. I don't know. but as far as the blatant disrespect, I think that what we have set up in this season finale, I don't think that's going to continue. I think we're going to see Mariner being more of a team player and being more, maybe she won't play by the books, but she'll do it for the good of the crew. And obviously her thinking out of the box is going to be used by Captain Freeman. So I don't think that she's going to continue, you know, being so disrespectful. I think it's going to turn into a good working relationship. So
yeah.
And the show, it's funny, it was very episodic if you look at the 10 episodes, but it definitely had a character arc all the way through. Like, we definitely had distinct progress with the characters as we went along, at least within the four. Well, I guess mostly within Boimler and Mariner, especially. Not so much Tendi and Rutherford. Rutherford kind of gets, you know, like a reboot. Tendi, I guess, experience? I don't know. But it was kind of funny that she got that exocomp, which seemed to have a lot of the same, like, enthusiasm that she did. And then when given the chance to, like, save the crew, she's like, no, not going to do it. So, you know, selfish exocomps, I agree with your rating there. But, you know, if you think about it, essentially they're asking, hey, exocomp, why don't you go do that and die? So, I mean, we may not think of it that way, but it's probably true. So anything you want to add?
I mean, just like, I kind of was thinking, like, Mariner definitely, like, has that, like, I'm like, I don't want to follow these rules, or, like, you know, I, like, kind of want to be, like, kind of the back end, which I totally agree with. Like, she's kind of like, I want to basically have my Starfleet experience be on my own terms and not anybody else's. And then she's also dealing with the fact that she is, you know, her mom's the captain, her father's an admiral, you know, so she's Wesley Crusher, but in a much different kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But I thought, like, the one thing that popped in my mind, though, as James, like, you're like in your feedback, it was just like, you know, we do have those moments where, like, Picard or, you know, whoever's captain or whoever's the main part of the show, like, they have those moments where they're, like, kind of, like, challenged to, like, oh, I have to be following Starfleet's rules, but then making the decision, like, no, I'm going to basically break the rule because I'm serving a better good. Mm-hmm. And Mariner encompasses all that, mm-hmm. but it's because it's her mother, Freeman, Captain Freeman, but it's like seeing it kind of like challenging her mom to basically like, oh yes, I can think outside of the box, you know, giving her like faced with, you know, the whole like, oh, we're like in like, you know, the ship might be destroyed, you know, like whatever, we're in danger. And then she turns to her daughter to being like, oh, like I need someone who is like going to, you know, basically break the rules. You know, it's like that is going to be outside the box, like, you know, like going outside of what my constraints are. And I don't know, I just, that whole playoff, it's like, well, we've seen those kind of deals with like, say, Picard and TNG. But it's usually kind of encompassed in a kind of like package of like, oh, like, okay, here's the moral conundrum. And then Picard has to like think about it. It's not like someone's coming to him all the time to be like, oh, no, you got to think about rules are meant to be broken. You know, so it's like, I think Mariner, it just encompasses at least that kind of thing. And at least in this part, you know, the series. So I don't know. That was the thing that I was thinking of. It was just like, you know, we've always had that kind of theme to where it's like Starfleet doesn't always have the answers, and it's only one, the greats that are like, oh, like, I mean, you know, Kirk broke the rules all the time. That's what he's known for.
Yeah.
So,
and Picard did, you know, at times, and when it was fitting or needed, he needed to do it.
Yeah, and you know, and Janeway did the same.
Cisco
did the same. Cisco, yeah. there's always, you know, it's like, it's a very common theme where it's like, well, Starfleet doesn't always have the answers, and you know, it takes their captain or whoever's in charge to like then weigh the, you know, weigh it all to being like, okay, what's the deal? But like Mariner is just off the bat, just always like, I don't want to be constrained by that. And so, you know, she does her own thing, and they feel like that's what her and her mom, that's what's growing between them. She realizes that I can't control my daughter. Like, she's her own person, but she's also not always wrong.
Yep. Okay. We got one more bit of feedback.
And it comes from Lee from Albuquerque, and he says, gotta love those spoiler posts. I just watched it immediately and have to talk about it right now. I'm a stream it ASAP Trekkie. Now I behave to watch it as a rerun along with my other rerun Trek shows. And lots of crying smiley faces and then, you know, live long and prospers emojis.
Hmm. Well, I mean, the one comeback that I have is, you know, we're a podcast. People want to hear our podcasts come out as soon as possible. So I put on there, especially for like those Facebook group members that are not in the US and Canada right now, we don't want them to be spoiled if they're not watching it through less than legal means, I guess you could say. But, you know, the show is not available for them, and not everybody gets to watch it, you know, right away. So I put spoiler/feedback. So I'm not really looking at those as a spoiler post, but if you haven't watched the show, you could get spoiled. So that's why it says spoiler. So, but we're not going to like wait a week before we talk about it or something like it. And it just takes a while for us to edit and get the blog post out and all that, or else, you know, we'd have the episodes out like right away. But I think because we make too much damn mistakes while we're recording, you know, it just takes us a while to get these out. And, you know, our episodes tend to be longer than a lot of podcasts do, because we exhaustively cover So anyway,
yeah,
that's why we do that. So I just wanted to respond to that. So, but you know, I try to get the episodes out Sunday night and I usually fail. It's usually like Monday sometime or Monday night. I think this last one didn't get out until Tuesday morning or something. Always, of course, check YouTube because that is the first place that the episode gets published. Exactly. So yeah. If you don't do that, subscribe to Talk Through Media YouTube channel. And that's where you'll find the episodes come out first. So subscribe and get notified, like hit the bell so that you get notified when they come out. And yeah, so just wanted a good time to mention that. So anyway, now it is time for our spot the references section, and there are a lot of references this week, so let's go into it. Well, of course, we get the exocomps, and we first see them actually, you know, become sentient, I guess, in the Next Generation episode from season 6, episode 9, The Quality of Life. So we see them making a sacrifice, and one of them goes in, I think, and gets short-circuited, and the other two survive. There were 3 exocomps total, but we see a selfish one in this case. But that was the first and only time that we've seen exocomps. But I think we've heard them mentioned before this week. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Beta 3 and Landru were from the season 1 episode from the original series, The Return of the Archons. And I wonder if it was Star Trek's version of the Purge. I wonder if I was trying to look this up, but I didn't really see anything about it, whether or not it inspired the Purge, because it is kind of similar to the Purge from what I understand. I've never actually seen any of the Purge. It's always been something I've been interested in, but I've never actually watched any of them. So
seen a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. On Ransom's pad, we see an image of Kirk and Spock from the animated series. I don't know if that image actually came from the animated series, but it was drawn in the same way. So
yeah, that was one of my questions, was like, I wrote in my notes, was like, was that from that comic? Because once I realized that that's what Landru and all this was about, I was like, oh, it has to be. But I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Captain Freeman's threat to Landru references one of the Kirk's famous talking a computer to death speeches. And he did this a few times. He did it in Return of the Archons. And then he did it on the episode The Changeling and iMUD. He talked the androids into shutting down. And we sort of get this, like, you know, talking the computer into doing what you want in The Vulcan Allo, part 2 from Discovery. Burnham uses, you know, logic against the computer to let her out of her cell. So not exactly the same way, you know, shutting it down, but similar. I should also mention that I got just about all of these from denofgeek.com. So I'll put a link to it on the blog post and in the Facebook group. So because they've got pretty much all of this here, but a lot of this stuff I picked up on my own. So they also mention in the episode, of course, the TOS era. It's always weird visiting planets from the TOS era. And of course, Ransom says these old scientists, which of course we've been calling the original series TOS for quite some time. So I thought that was funny. And Freeman also mentions a gamester of Triskelion for the episode Gamesters of Triskelion. Boimler, of course, mentions that Cerritos has a Captain Freeman Day, you know, similar to Captain Picard Day. which we first see in the TNG episode, the Pegasus, and we also see the banner in the first episode of Star Trek Picard, Remembrance, earlier this year. I like this. Mariner tries to deflect accusations of nepotism by pointing out that Wesley Crusher worked with his mom.
Yeah.
That was funny. The Kallus system is mentioned in the Next Generation's episode Firstborn, that the Packlids hang out there. They're seen there a lot. Of course, we see them. I think it was mentioned that we see them first in the season 2 episode Samaritan Snare. That was, I actually really liked that one. That's the one after the Borg are introduced in season 2. I always remember that. But that was actually a really good episode from season 2, where Geordi, you know, is kind of stuck over there, and we find out about Picard's artificial heart. So anyway, spoiler. Ransom says that the Packlid ship is carving up the Cerritos, quote, like a first contact day salmon. And of course we know about first contact day. We first hear about it actually on the short trek. And I guess it was mentioned, we actually see it happen in Star Trek First Contact, of course, but we see it mentioned again in the short trek Children of Mars. And it was also, of course, I think mentioned, was it mentioned in Picard? Other than, of course, the banner. I was thinking of the interview, but the interview was actually from the anniversary of the attack on Mars, which I guess since it was on First Contact Day, it would be the same day. So there were some funny things with Mariner's contraband. We get a tribble, which of course is mentioned in the episode, a fencing foil, which of course we see in the Naked Time Sulu's fighting with. And that was funny. And I guess Mariner also tells Boimler that he could be a sword guy in the first Lower Decks episode. I don't remember that, but I believe it. We also see a bottle of Klingon blood wine, a Batleth, of course, but the funniest thing, and I did not catch this, I had to go back. It was mentioned on denofgeek.com, and I went back just before we started recording and confirmed it. We see a Spock helmet. Now, if you don't know what the Spock helmet is, go to the Netflix series, The Toys That Made Us. And I believe it was the first episode of season 2. They did a Star Trek episode. Look for the episode that is all about Star Trek, and you will see the Spock helmet. And the Spock helmet is the goofiest thing ever. It was a thing. I remember it being a thing when I was a little kid. And it was kind of like, oh, Spock helmet. Even me as a little kid, I don't remember Spock wearing a helmet. And it's the goofiest thing. Like it has like a siren, you know, like a flashing light siren kind of thing on the top of it. And it's so goofy. It was like repurposed from some other.
Like space. Yeah. Like some space like suit or yeah. something.
Yeah. So the Spock helmet, though, I think it's so hilarious. They actually now have the Spock helmet in canon. So that was hysterical. Anyway, brilliant that they did that. Tendi uses the whole like philosophical thing that we see in The Wrath of Khan, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And then that's kind of turned around in the next movie, where the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many. But Tendi says, what about the needs of the many, to Peanut Hamper? The alien in the first officer's chair on the Titan looks a lot like a Saurian, which, you know, we've heard about Saurian brandy for quite some time, in TOS even. And we see some Saurians in the motion picture, but we also have Linus on Star Trek Discovery that's a Saurian. So it looked like a Saurian. Don't know for sure if it was a Saurian. Mariner got her Romulan ale from Riker. That was cool. We had seen Romulan, I don't think they called it Romulan ale, though. They called it whiskey, I think. I think I remember.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Romulan whiskey. They mentioned it in the first episode, and we actually saw it in the first episode, where I think Mariner was drunk on Romulan whiskey. Shax got a similar funeral to Spock in The Wrath of Khan, and for that matter, Arium in The Red Angel. Riker tells Mariner, "Why don't you buy me a drink?" And Mariner replies, "We don't use money anymore." You know, that's, of course, a thing. Then we actually, this came up a lot between Ruthie and me on the Star Trek Picard cast, because there were a lot of like references to money, and we were very confused by this pretty much all season. And, you know, we finally like decided that if you're in the Federation, you don't use money. And if you're outside of the Federation, you still have to have like some form of, you know, currency or latinum or whatever. So, but yeah, Riker doesn't have to buy Mariner a drink because there's no, unless we're on Deep Space Nine or something, or that, what was it called? Free Cloud, place they go to in Star Trek Picard, assuming it exists in this, 19 years prior. The planet the Titan is headed for at the very end of the episode is Tolgana 4, which is the same planet that Boimler and Mariner visited in the second episode, Envoys, which Boimler kind of refers to with the other officers there. It really looks like Boimler in his new quarters has a picture of Ransom in a place of honor, which I didn't see this. This was mentioned by Den of Geek, so, but I'll take their word for it. And it's kind of weird because, like, does he think Ransom was his friend? Didn't seem like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Weird. One thing we hear as Boimler is leaving, Mariner says to him, "I'm going to feed you to an Armus." And that, of course, is a reference to the being that killed Tasha Yar. So, you know, we have Lieutenant Shax die in this episode. So I guess it's kind of like a tribute to Lieutenant Yar that she's also, or Armus is kind of mentioned in this episode. We see Riker. The last three things are Riker related. He is still obsessed with the NX-01 Enterprise. That's, of course, a reference to These Are the Voyages, which is a universally panned episode of Enterprise, the final episode of Enterprise. He mentions that Tolgana 4 has a little Risa. And, of course, you know, Troy says, "Does that mean we need a little Horgon?" And Riker says, "No, we'll use the same Horgon." So, of course, Horgon has to do with Chamaha Roan, and we see that actually mentioned earlier on that same episode, I think. And of course, Riker's warp speed is a reference to his jazz. Give me warp in the factor of 5, 6, 7, 8, which to me was kind of goofy, but
It was funny because then you just hear Troy in the background and it's like, oh, the jazz. It's like always the jazz.
Yeah. That's it for my exhaustive spot the references section. Again, I have to thank denofgeek.com for pretty much all of this. I had some of it, but I'll thank them for 80% of it. Kyle, do you have anything else you want to bring up or anything you want to say about the season in general?
I think I pretty much have spelled it out that the season has taken, someone that basically was like kind of not really going to give it really much like, you know, props or whatever to being like a total convert at the end. So well done, Lower Decks.
Yep. Yep. I would give an applause to the everyone that has been involved with Star Trek Lower Decks. Those of you who didn't give the show a chance or bailed, I am going to tell people, like, and I know I'm going to be telling Ruthie this, and I know she's going to be resistant because she's Ruthie, that she should watch it. And I think, like LT mentioned this last week, this is going to be something that you can watch in a long night or a weekend. You know, it's yeah, a 5 hour, it's less than 5 hour commitment, because there's 10 episodes, each of them is less than a half hour. So you can just go right through it. And, you know, if you skip the intro and the credits and all that stuff, you can power through it even faster. So I think this show will do well in binging, and I intend to watch it in binge and see how it turns out, because I didn't really get a chance to, like, go back and watch past episodes.
Just, yeah, same here. You know, it's
so I would like to, you know, take some time, probably like after Discovery or something, and watch them in a night and see how it is. But yeah, I think that the show really, you know, we talked about it, but it really hit on a high note. Sorry, LT, I guess you didn't agree, but I think you would agree that the show was better than your expectations of it. And I really look forward to season two. I wish that we were to get season two, you know, soon, hopefully after. It's possible that this may be the next show that we get for Star Trek after Discovery. It's either going to be Lower Decks or it's going to be Star Trek Prodigy, which we'll talk about in the news. But yeah, so the only thing I wanted to bring up beyond that is I look at all these California class ships, because I want to know, what's the deal with the city? And of course, we hear about the Sacramento. And of course, Sacramento was, you know, it's the capital of California. So is that a different class? I don't know. Or is that like a special California class ship? Who knows? But the Solvang is Danish. It's a Danish word for sunny field. And it is a pretty small city, actually, in Santa Barbara County, located in the Santa Ynez Valley. I think that's how you say it, Y-N-E-Z, or in my Canadian heritage, Z. Population in the 2010 census of 5,245, so a pretty small city. Of course, that one that we saw, the Rubido, wasn't even a city, but it was had a much larger population, so... And that didn't fare any better. Poor ships that Captain Dayton captained. All right, so let's move on to our shipwide announcements. Just one thing to mention, that Jonathan Frakes has either directed or appeared in every incarnation of Star Trek since TNG. Well, okay, not including the movies. He obviously wasn't in the J.J. Verse movies, but he was in, obviously, TNG. He directed the TNG First Contact, Star Trek First Contact, and Star Trek Insurrection. He has been seen as Tom Riker in DS9, as Will Riker in Voyager, as Will Riker in Enterprise. He's directed episodes of Discovery and directed episodes of... and as acted as Will Riker in Star Trek Picard. So he's been in everything. I guess if you call Lower Decks a show, he hasn't been in that. So, okay. But he's definitely set the record for most appearances. And like I say, so he's either directed or appeared in. He's directed Discovery. He directed Picard. And he's now been in Lower Decks. So very cool. And I think Marina Sirtis has been in TNG, the movies, Voyager, Enterprise, and now Lower Decks and Picard. So almost as many, but she's not directed any. So
she's never been in DS9?
No. No, I don't believe so. I don't believe so. Okay, so the big news that we'll start off with is there was a virtual con yesterday for New York Comic Con, and the big panel, which was a combined panel of Lower Decks and Discovery. So they talked about the Lower Decks season one, you know, which had just released its finale episode. And of course, we're a week away from Discovery, so they talked about season three. But there was an announcement at the end, and that was about Star Trek Prodigy. And they announced that starring in Star Trek Prodigy is none other than Kate Mulgrew as, and they said, Captain Catherine Janeway. So I think this is wonderful. It is very much, in fact, I'd even say, so I love that they're bringing back Catherine Janeway. I'm wondering if Kurtzman called her Captain just because that's how most people know her. Of course, her last appearance was in Star Trek Nemesis as an admiral. So, you know, but I think it was quite interesting, and supposedly the show was supposed to be about some younger kids that find a derelict starship and have adventures with it. So I don't know what that means, and I'm not sure how Catherine Janeway comes into that. Maybe she's on the holodeck, I don't know. Or you know, maybe she comes and, you know, captains it. I don't know either, but supposedly she will be a big part of the show. And I got to watch Kate Mulgrew talk about it, and she's really excited about it. She, you know, thinks that, of course, let's face it, it was a big deal in the 90s for Catherine Janeway to be a captain of a starship. And she played a huge role model for a lot, millions, I would say, of women out there that, you know, just like, you know, she represented just so much about what it meant to be a woman and be a leader. And, you know, she was a fantastic captain. You know, I would say this, you know, I talked earlier about how Voyager wasn't my favorite show. My two favorite things of the show were Janeway and Seven of Nine, and I guess a little less the Doctor, but only a little bit less. But Janeway, I mean, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she is. I agree.
So, yeah, it to me, bringing her back is brilliant, and I look forward to her coming back, and it makes me a lot more excited about this show. We talked this week about the new Walking Dead show that's out there that's young adult, and I'm not very excited about that show. And of course, this is probably even younger, but they bring in Janeway like this, and I think that this instantly makes the show more interesting to me. So,
yeah. Agreed.
Yep. So, yeah. Great. It's great news. They had panels for Discovery and Lower Decks, and the big thing that came out of that is they released the first 2 minutes of Discovery, and you can see that pretty much anywhere. You can see it on StarTrek.com or CBS.com or YouTube or Facebook, Twitter. It's pretty much everywhere. So go check it out. It's basically the first 2 minutes, and it's pretty exciting, I think. And they also, of course, mentioned that season two work is underway for Lower Decks already. And I had heard this already. you know, so this wasn't like shocking to me, but they did mention this, of course. So yeah, that's why I wouldn't be surprised if Lower Decks is the next thing that we see after Discovery, but it could be Prodigy, who knows. And getting back to Prodigy, they said that they were sitting on the secret of Kate Mulgrew appearing, you know, starring in this show for a year. They were sitting on this. They couldn't tell, you know, they couldn't mention it until yesterday. So I forgot to mention that earlier, but also a big part of that news. Patrick Stewart finished his Sonnet a Day social media project that he, you know, released on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. He got through all of the Shakespeare sonnets. So he was pretty excited to do that. He took a break at one point. I think he was working on his autobiography, but he brought that back in. So we have ratings again, and I wanted to mention it. And these are ratings for, I believe it was season one, episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery. This particular week, it was up in total viewers. I think this is the most viewers that it's had so far, with 1.815 million viewers, with a 0.2 in the 18 to 49, which is equal to what it was for season one, episode 1, down from season one, episode 2, where it got a 0.3, but it got a 1.679 million last week. So, and this week it was going up against Thursday Night Football. I didn't go back to look if it was last week or not, but you know, football won all the time slots this week. So as it would normally do. We got a late addition to the news section, and it's so late that it's not even in our document that we use. It's that Kurtzman and CBS are planning Star Trek TV through 2027, including more Discovery seasons. And that's according to an article that Wes from Minnesota, of course, who helps us with our news, posted in the Facebook group while we started recording. So it's there if you're a member of the Facebook group. But he talks about Janeway. He says that when you're looking at legacy characters, you have to have a very specific reason to bring them back without revealing too many details. Kevin and Dan, that's Hageman, the brothers that are creators of Star Trek Prodigy, came in with a pitch that just blew the doors off the place. There was a really clear, wonderful reason to bring Janeway into the story. So interesting. Yeah. And that when talked about Prodigy, he says, I think one of the things that Star Trek has not done as effectively over time is bring in new people, particularly much younger people. And I don't see any reason why that this amazing story has existed for 55 years. That is so about everything that we are dealing with in our lives right now cannot be shared and enjoyed by younger generations. I totally agree. And I look forward to that. And I really hope that it's going to do a great job in helping young people get excited about Star Trek, because we need that. And there, you know, it's funny, but like Generation Y, there's a lot of them that don't know a damn thing about Star Trek. And I've talked to like kids in their 20s that know nothing about Star Trek, like zero, can't even like, don't even know it exists. And that just blows my mind that, you know, so if you were a kid and after like Enterprise was off the air, you don't know anything about Star Trek. That just blows my mind. But yeah, it needs, and that's something that has been there with Star Wars. It has had a, you know, a way for kids to get involved, and Star Trek hasn't had that. And even like, you know, the Marvel universe has had that too, but Star Trek hasn't had that. So it needs to bring that in. Yeah. when the part about the 2027, he says, this is something that came up in the panel about Discovery. They were talking about, I didn't mention this before, but they talked about how relevant this season of Discovery is to what's going on now. I can't wait for that. But Kurtzman kind of talks about this a little bit. He says, I feel like the world needs Star Trek right now. The key is not to homogenize Star Trek. The way to do that is to make sure each show is carried by a different voice. I think about the crayon analogy. There's a bunch of different colors in the box, but it's all in the same box. That's how I look at Star Trek. Each show has a unique proposition. It can't be like another show. In a world where streaming content and the way people consume streaming is so ravenous, and given how hopeful and beautiful the messages of Star Trek are, I don't think you can have too much, because there's something for everybody. And maybe you don't want to watch all of them. Maybe you only want to watch one, but that's okay, because someone else will watch a different one. About the 2027 thing, he says a couple of his people from Secret Hideout, seen their names, Heather Caden and Aaron Byers, who work with him at Secret Hideout, literally just got off a call before this with the network, mapping out with us through 2027. And he says, when I say that, it's not like it's set in stone. It's just, okay, here's a plan. Here's where we're looking. Here's how the different shows are going to drop. Consider that it takes a year from start to production to airing, so you have a plan anyway in advance to get these things done. You have to stay on top of the zeitgeist to make sure what you're doing is relevant. Case in plan, or case in point, Strange New Worlds. I mean, you know, they didn't have any plans to make that show, and then Pike comes, and oh my goodness. So kudos to them. I'm going to say in all honesty that there are years and years left on Discovery. I think that because, first of all, you know, Star Trek in general has a long history of going 7 seasons minimum, and we just jumped into the future. And in a way, it's not that it's a brand new show, but it's a whole new set of variables with a whole new set of ideas and stories. I don't think we limit ourselves to thinking, oh, we're capped at this place. I'll tell you that when the show starts to feel too stale for us, we'll be rallying to stop it. But for now, it doesn't feel like we are running into a shortage of stories. So that's interesting. I mean, that goes right in the face of like Doomcock and all those guys. I keep saying this, be canceled. I'm not going to read all of this, but there are a couple more things to go with here. He was asked about Michelle Paradise, who is now his co-showrunner, and it brings up a couple things that I thought were interesting here. He says, Michelle really became essential to my working process in season 2. I recognized very quickly that Michelle has a lot of things that I need from a partner. Michelle's unbelievably organized. She's very, very thoughtful. I'm spending my days bouncing between many different shows, so I've learned to do this weird gear shift of like 100% focus on what's in front of me for a window of time until everybody gets the answers they need and that thing can move forward, and then I can shift to the next thing. Michelle makes that so easy for me. She's very thoughtful about Star Trek, and she's great about running the writer's room. She has that amazing combo of real authority as a co-showrunner, but also the generosity of allowing people to own their ideas. That's great. And then he, of course, talks about COVID and talking about like the challenges of that. And he also mentions a little bit about another new show that he's doing, which is based on the Silence of the Lambs stuff called Clarice. So interesting. But I knew about that. I think that might be on Showtime, or is it on CBS? But that's with, Michael Cudlitz is on that.
Yeah.
From Walking Dead. All right. That is it for our supersized episode, for our supersized finale. So, Kyle, why don't you tell the good people how to contact us?
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can also call 216-232-6146. You can email us at our email address, which is at lowerdecks@talkthroughmedia.com.
That is, of course, for Lower Decks. Now that Star Trek Discovery will be returning, you can also use, well, we'll get it either way, but the email for Star Trek Discovery is StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com. So, yeah. Didn't think of putting that in the notes, but as I'm reading it, it's like, oh, crap. Got to mention the new one.
But also the best way is to post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find that at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. The deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 1, yay, cheer,
yep,
will be on a regular day and time, Friday, October 16th, 2020, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central.
And of course, we have to say...
Yes.
So exciting.
I'm going to try to submit feedback this time, and actually, I mean, I'll be busy with, you know, fear and all that stuff, but... I always listen to you guys talk, and I'm
just
like,
just record something real quick and send it, you know?
No, totally true. I could do that. And
yeah,
now that I'm going to make it more of an effort this time. Then best way to support us, you can find us at Twitter at StarTrekTTM. A great way you can support us is also to share our, share us on Twitter and Facebook. You can also go to facebook.com/talkthroughmedia, where you can also write a review.
Yeah, it's worth saying for Facebook that we post the episodes on the Facebook page. Those can be shared. The Facebook group, the Star Trek TTM podcasts, is a private group, so you can't share those, but we always post the episode on the Facebook page for the network.
Yep. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review.
Another way you can support us is, of course, through Patreon. And we released an episode, what was that, last week, I think? And we will be doing our October episode. We don't have it scheduled yet, but I imagine it'll probably be in a couple of weeks after, you know, maybe a couple of episodes of Discovery has come out. We'll probably talk about Lower Decks and Discovery. So we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, this guy over there, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, and Jeff Gentry. We already mentioned this already, but just a reminder that all of our new episodes are available on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media, and you'll find our channel. And remember to subscribe and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos, because when our episodes go out, they first go out as a video on YouTube. So always check there first. It's just part of our process. And lastly, said this already, but reminder, if you're on the Picard feed and you expect Ruthie and me next week, you're not going to find it. You've got to switch over to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed. I'll probably put a little reminder in that feed next week, but just a final reminder, if you're planning to watch Star Trek Discovery and you're subscribe to the Star Trek Picard cast feed, switch over and subscribe to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed instead. It has on the feed Lower Decks, Picard, and Discovery, all three of the new shows. So, and of course, if you subscribe to our Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, you don't have to do a thing, because you get all those shows, and you also get the rebinged DS9 podcast that Kim and James do, the Walking Dead talk through that Kyle and I do. And that switches this week to Fear the Walking Dead talk through on the same feed. And Let's Talk Through, which maybe someday we'll get to. But speaking of the Walking Dead talk through, we released our episode 117, which discusses the pseudo season finale for The Walking Dead, and I say that because they've extended the season by 6 episodes, but the original season finale, which we had to wait 6 months for, season 10, episode 16, and we also cover that first episode of The Walking Dead World Beyond with our new co-host, which you know from this podcast and our guest host last week, none other than LT from NC. So that episode is out if you want to hear it. And Kyle and LT will be covering Walking Dead, or I should say Fear the Walking Dead, through the next half season. I will come in as I can, but my focus will be on Discovery. So
yep.
If you want to hear me, Discovery's where you're going to hear me. I'll probably still be on because I can't stay away. but yeah, I'll be in a lesser capacity. Yeah. Our next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast is season 3, episode 1, titled "That Hope Is You." And we know that that is a line from the episode because we've seen it in the trailers. It is written by Michelle Paradise and Jenny Lumet and Alex Kurtzman, and it is directed by Lotunde Osunsanmi. We don't have a description yet, but we know that Discovery has and Burnham have traveled into 3188. So to that we must say,
what?
It's not true. That's impossible.
Well, it's not impossible. It's happened. And shut up. That's Star Wars. But appropriate. Yeah. All right. So until next week with Discovery, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And hopefully Kyle will see you.
Yes.
We'd love to have you at some point on Discovery. Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.